How many pints are in a gallon? How many square yards are in an acre? For that matter, how many palms are in a cubit? If you know these things, and I'm guessing you don't know all of them, why do you know them? We've been measuring things since the earliest days of human civilization, but why we measure things the way we do is a quirky but critical part of our history. Here to tell that story is James Vincent, author of the new book Beyond Measure, The Hidden History of Measurement from Cubits to Quantum Constants. James is a senior reporter for Vox Media, who's also written for the London Review of Books, the Financial Times, and Wired. Here he is to offer up five of his big ideas.
Hey there. My name's James Vincent, and I'm an author and a journalist from the UK. I've written a book called Beyond Measure, which is a history of measurement, from ancient civilizations right up to the present day and cutting-edge science. It's a history book, but it's also a science book and a sociology book. It's not only the story of how certain systems of measurement came to be, but who gets power from wielding these measurements and what effect they have on our lives and on our society. I'd love to share with you five key insights that I learned while reading and writing about this topic. So here they are. Insight number one. Measurement is the kindling of civilization. Although measurement has a reputation as a dry and fastidious practice, a fusty discipline beloved only by pedants, in Beyond Measure, I make the case that metrology, the science of measurement, is as important to the development of human civilization as writing or mathematics. Without measurement, there would be no pyramids in Egypt, no Roman roads or aqueducts. There would be no empires of trade, and certainly no scientific revolution. Measurement is not only vital to the coordination of human effort, but is, I believe, a sort of language, a tool that allows us to communicate over space and time and describe the world around us. This lesson was hammered home for me during my research when I visited Cairo to see an ancient, important, and obscure type of measuring device known as a nilometer. As the name suggests, nilometers were used by the ancient Egyptians to measure the depth of the Nile's flood each year. They're essentially huge rulers, carved into the riverbank or constructed as freestanding columns that are marked in cubits, the ancient Egyptian unit of length, equal to the distance from the elbow to the fingertip. The Nile's annual flooding was the source of Egypt's great wealth, covering the river's banks each year with a fertile soil that provided an abundance of crops. However, the depth of these floods varied, and a few cubits of water could be the difference between a year of feast and a year of famine. Nilometers helped to tame this unpredictability. There were thought to be hundreds built around the country over the millennia, and their measurements were used to help set the agenda of the Egyptian state each year. If they showed that the floodwaters were low, extra grain could be put aside to stave off hunger and riots. If they recorded particularly high floods, then the state could rest easy in the knowledge that the harvest would be good. These nilometers were so important that they were often built into temple complexes, where they would be consulted by Egypt's hybrid caste of priest civil servants. And indeed, because the flooding of the Nile was thought to be divine in origin, deified in the form of the god Hapi, the nilometers could be said to gauge not only the nation's fortunes, but the happiness of the gods themselves. A ruler that measures the divine is one that shows the power of measurement for our ancestors. Insight number two. Measurement is a reflection of our lives and our labour. How do you define an acre? Today you would measure out 4,047 square metres, or 43,560 square feet. But in the Middle Ages, the answer was both simpler and more complex. An acre was the amount of land that could be ploughed by a team of oxen in a single day. This is an example of how early units of measurement were often defined based on lived experience. They were taken from our bodies, from nature, and from work. In the modern world, measurement often seems abstract and disconnected from our lives, but ancient units remind us that measurement is a practice that is deeply connected to our sense of the world. Most ancient societies, for example, have units of length derived from various body parts, like your foot or the distance between your outstretched hands. Many societies created rich catalogues of measurement from this single index. The Aztecs, for example, not only had units equivalent to the cubit and foot, but also the forearm alone, the tip of the hand to the armpit, the tip of the finger to the shoulder, and many more besides. Some of these units still survive today, transmuted by centuries of use. The mile, for example, was originally the Roman mille passus, which literally translates as 1,000 paces. Other units of distance are just as literal in their definition, though with stranger origins. An old Finnish unit of length is the penilkulma, for example, which was originally measured as the distance at which a dog's bark could be heard, while the Sami people of northern Europe have a unit known as the poronkusima, which literally translates as reindeer's piss, and is supposedly equal to the distance a reindeer can walk before urinating. If you're curious, that's around 6 miles. Units like these are inconsistent compared to modern measures, but they also have unique advantages, encoding information about people's lives and the world around them. Consider the old Irish unit of the collop, which is defined as the amount of land needed to graze a single cow. That means a collop of lush pasture is going to be much smaller than a collop of barren hillside. This makes it a unit that adapts to the landscape it measures, and that captures information relevant to the people who use it. As one character in the 1942 Irish novel The Tailor and Ansi comments, "An acre might be an acre of rock, but you know where you are with a collop." Insight number 3. The metric system changed the world forever. The historian Eric Hobsbawm once commented that, quote, "The most lasting and universal consequence of the French Revolution is the metric system." It sounds like a joke, but there's more than a little truth to this statement. For while the political ideals developed during the French Revolution have obviously affected the course of history in huge and vital ways, it's only the metric system, created during that same tumultuous period, that has been embraced universally, used by communists, fascists, monarchists, and republicans alike. Part of the reason for the metric system's importance is that it was a political project as much as a scientific one, intended to do away with the inconsistent and confusing units of the past, and replacing them with measures that were universal and equal for all, a reflection of the revolution's political ideals. Prior to the revolution, France was badly in need of metrological reform. By one estimate, the country was home to more than 1,000 recognisable units, with more than 250,000 local variants. The most common measure of cloth, for example, the aune, could refer to one of 17 national variations. As you can imagine, this created confusion, it hampered the economy, and it made it easy for the aristocracy to exploit commoners. One trick at the time was for local lords to collect tax payments of grain using units that were much larger than those used by peasants in the market. This led to a demand for equality in measurement, as well as equality before the law. And as a common revolutionary slogan put it at the time, what the people want is one king, one law, one weight, and one measure. The metric system was designed to solve all these problems, defining its units using cutting-edge science that replaced the old systems of power. Take, for example, the unit of length, the meter. This was defined by French scientists as 1/10,000,000th of the distance from the North Pole to the equator, and it replaced a similar length unit, the pied du roi, which literally means the king's foot. So, instead of a unit of measurement derived from the bodily authority of the monarch, the revolutionaries turned to an impartial arbiter, and one that represents for them humanity's shared heritage, the earth itself. It was this unique approach to measurement that helped spread the metric system across the globe. And in the centuries since its creation, it has been adopted by just about every country on Earth. There are a few nations like the UK that still retain old units in odd places, but only three are usually called non-metric. That's Myanmar, Liberia, and of course, the United States. However, this isn't the whole truth. For although the United States certainly retains old measures like the pound and foot, these units have actually been defined using metric standards since 1893. The US may boast about its resistance to metrication, but in labs and factories around the country, its units bow down to the revolutionary might of metric. Insight number 4. Measurement is deeply cultural. Here's an unexpected consequence of the invention of the metric system. Brexit. Again, this is mostly a joke, but not completely. Consider this. When the UK tried to introduce metric units in line with EU regulations, a number of market traders in the country were prosecuted for selling goods in pounds and ounces. They were dubbed the metric martyrs by the press, and their case became a cause célèbre for sceptics of the EU, generating a huge amount of attention for groups like UKIP and for political figures like Nigel Farage. Brexit had more causes than just a few market traders, of course, but metrication was an important battleground. One BBC journalist described the prosecution of the metric martyrs as a watershed moment for the Brexit project, an event that, quote, helps turn public opinion against EU membership, giving critics something tangible to point to that affected people's everyday lives and for which Brussels appeared responsible. This is because measurement is much more than just weights and measures. It's something that is deeply embedded in our culture and strongly associated with political sovereignty. Wars have not been fought over measurement, to my knowledge anyway, but the right to define a country's weights and measures is often won or lost in such struggles. When Napoleon conquered Europe, he imposed metric measures at the point of a bayonet, much to the consternation of many nations. And still today, metric units are seen as a foreign cultural threat to many in the US and the UK. As part of the research for my book, I found out firsthand how important measures are to some people when I hung around with an anti-metric organisation known as ARM, or Active Resistance to Metrication. This is a group of metrological guerrillas who carry out raids across the UK, replacing metric signposts with those using imperial units. They told me that these units of measurement weren't just scientific markers, but cultural artefacts, part of an ancient heritage that we should not give up on easily. To many people, I'm sure this sounds like a silly claim, but I believe there is some truth to this argument. After all, who in the UK would ever want to get rid of pints in pubs? Some measures are just too close to the heart to ever replace. Insight number 5. We are obsessed with metrics, and it's not always to our benefit. Measurement has become one of the defining features of contemporary life, a discipline that is practiced at all levels of society, and often presented as the only reliable method for progress. From school onwards, our achievements are nothing unless they can be quantified. At work, bosses rely on metrics like KPIs and OKRs to gauge our success, while the ubiquity of digital sensors like smartwatches, constantly counting our steps and heart rate, mean that we are measuring ourselves more than ever before. But why did measurement rise to such prominence in all our lives? And how does this obsession shape us? As I've hopefully already shown, measurement is fundamental to structuring society. But from the 19th century onwards, it became particularly embedded in all our lives. This is mostly due to the rise of what is known as managerial capitalism. Prior to this period, companies were usually controlled by individuals who had worked their way up through that specific industry. They tended to be intimately familiar with the work and the methods of production. But managerial capitalism involved the creation of a class of dedicated managers, who needed new ways to judge the performance of their workers and workplaces. To do this, they relied on ideologies like scientific management, the use of measurement to improve productivity in work. The inventor of scientific management, Frederick Winslow Taylor, broke down manual tasks into individual actions, measuring with a stopwatch how long it took to perform each step in ideal conditions, before pushing workers to work in the fastest and most efficient manner. Here you can see already how measurement has become a tool that is abstracted from human experience. Instead, it transforms work into a series of numbers to be managed on a spreadsheet. Similar innovations, like the rise of mass production techniques, only further embedded this view of work, and the use of metrics to judge performance spread from industry to other areas of society, like education, healthcare, and policing. Now in the 21st century, a belief in the importance of measurement has been strengthened by the rise of digital technologies that make tracking time and motion cheaper and easier. Perhaps the ultimate expression of this ideology today is the Amazon warehouse, where workers' movements are tracked constantly, and individual tasks, like moving items from a shelf to a package, are timed down to the second. Frederick Taylor and his stopwatch could only dream of such surveillance. Often, our obsession with measurement means that we ignore the goal that the measures are designed to achieve. My own mother was an English teacher in a secondary school, and it's from her I first heard the phrase, "You don't fatten a pig by weighing it," meaning in the case of her students that too much focus on testing meant that actual learning was left by the wayside. Measurement, I believe, is fundamental to human flourishing, but we should never forget that measurements are made to serve humanity and not the other way around.
Thank you, James. That was James Vincent with 5 big ideas from Beyond Measure, the hidden history of measurement from qubits to quantum constants. You might also want to check out our BookBite and e-course for Making Numbers Count, the Art and Science of Communicating Numbers by Chip Heath and Carla Starr. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.